Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
He has the home advantage and he has a wonderful body shot. Anthony Crowell. I'm not sure he's going to make it. I think he's going to be knocked out here. It is over. Anthony Million Dollar Crowell has the dream night. The fairy tale ending. One of the nicest guys in British boxing has the night of his life.
Fairy tales do come true sometimes, and he really deserves it. And look at what it means to him. He's world champion in Manchester.
The winner by count out, and the new WBA lightweight champion of the world, the Fighting Pride of Manchester, Anthony Million Dollar Crowell.
Anthony Crowell, you're very welcome.
Good to be on, Vice. You okay?
Yeah, very good. So, I mean, winning a world title in front of a home crowd, a pretty amazing thing, I would presume. Have you watched that fight back often? Do you ever remind yourself of that moment?
I've watched it back a few hundred times, but other than that, no, yeah, you know, now and again, you need a bit of motivation. I might put the last round of it on, and it's something that'll stay in the planner, the sky planner for ages. Well, forever. So, it was the dream night, and it's a dream that I've had not just since I turned professional, for when I very first laced on a pair of gloves, aged 10 years old. Well, before that, really. But when I sort of went back to think, right, I want to compete, that's a dream I've had since then. So, to achieve that dream, yeah, it means an awful lot to me.
Because I presume in those formative years, you're watching Ricky Hatton fill out that same arena, Manchester crowd, and have big nights there.
Of course, yeah. I obviously, being a Manchester lad, I was there before Ricky Hatton was at the arena. Like, I saw big nights with Nazim Hamid, you know, with Michael Brody, Joe Calzaghe, I saw there a few times. But obviously, yeah, Ricky, being a Manchester lad, was... it was always someone who's, you know, I always dreamed. It sounds cheesy, but I was there in the gods there and just thinking, oh, one day, please God, let this be me. So I've said it plenty of times. Every time I fight at that arena, I think back to those days. And I remember before Joe Calzaghe, Jeff Lacer, I remember Joe Calzaghe walking out, and I was sat next to my best mate at the time, and he says, you know, probably just seeing a best mate, a proper best mate, and filling me with a load of false hope. But he says, this will be you one day walking out for a world title. And little things like that stick with me. And I remember as soon as I did, I remember telling him, and, you know, you bring it all back. And it's funny how life pans out at times. But, yeah, no, very, very satisfying.
I'm sure. That was 2015. We might just join the dots as to how you got there, because there were plenty of ups and downs. You mentioned lacing your gloves up at the age of 10. Your father, Wayne, had fought professionally at light middleweight in the 80s. You turned pro at just 19. Did the amateur ranks hold much temptation for you, or were you itching to get pro?
Yeah. No, to be honest, when I look back now, I probably turned a little bit too early, but there's no regrets whatsoever. You know, I learned sort of on the job a little bit, and it was just that I'd won a senior ABA title, and I was going down to England camps, you know, weekends away and in the week. And I'll be honest, and I'm not mad. Like, if anyone who knows me will know just how hard I train, but I wasn't enjoying them. Well, I wasn't enjoying them. I didn't think I was learning too much from them either, you know, without being, you know, disrespectful in any way. It just wasn't working for me down there. And I felt that, to be honest, as well. I felt that I was more of a sparring partner down there. They was looking at me, you know, for the other lads. I weren't getting a chance. I was a few times, you know, I I'd get told, oh, there's a multinations coming up, we're going to send you over there, and it didn't happen.
Mm.
So after a few times, I'm thinking, I'm down here, and it's not enjoying the training, not feel like it's benefiting me too much either. It's, and I won't get him a chance. That was the other thing. If I would have got my chance to perform for my country more, I mean, I've done it an handful of times, but more regular, then that might have let me put up with it. But I felt like, do you get me? There was nothing, sort of, there was no end product.
Yeah, you didn't feel like an Olympics was on the horizon.
That was for me, and then obviously the offer come in to turn professional, and I thought, yeah, you know, why not? Let's give this a go. It was always my dream to turn professional.
Mm.
It was always my dream to turn professional, but I didn't actually, you know, plan on turning that early on. You know, at such an early age, at 19, I was still a boy.
Mm.
But like I say, our offer come through and it was a good offer, and I turned over, turned professional.
Yeah. So for the purposes of the time, just to sum up those early years, there's some initial success for sure, and then there's a few losses.
Yeah, there's a few speed bumps.
Yeah, understandable. Like, you get to a point in 2012, I'm sure, I mean, this is a very well-known case, the Kieran Farrell fight, where 2012, it's a bit of a crossroads fight for you in some respects. Like, he's young, he's up and coming, he's got a 14-0 record, you're a young pro, you've had the few losses, a few speed bumps. You kind of need to, a loss here is very, very damaging for you, is the context back in 2012 against Kieran Farrell.
Totally. I've said time a good few times, there's a job waiting for me Monday morning if I was to lose that fight. It was that close from it all being all over and looking at a new career and then to where sort of the heights that I hit after there.
Yeah. But what would you have done as a matter of interest if you...
Do you know what? My friend had a security company and it would have been working in the office for him, so not the most exciting of things. But listen, I'd like to think that I would have still carried on boxing because of my love for the sport, but not being a full-time professional would have made it so much harder.
Mm.
And, it certainly would have been tough. So, I mean, that just shows you, you know, how much was sort of on the line that night. It was a fight away from the TV cameras. It was streamed on the internet.
Right.
But it wasn't, you know, glamorous. It was in the Boulders. If anyone knows Manchester, a warehouse on a December night, and it was Baltic in there that night. So there was no glitz and glamour.
What age are you in 2012 then for that fight?
In 2012, I was, for that fight, I'd not long turned. I'm 31 now. I was 31 in November, so yeah, would it be 25 or 26?
Yeah, mid-20s. Okay, so it's that period where you need to step on or not. So you beat Farrell, and I've only read about it because, as you said, it's not exactly been... It wasn't on TV or wasn't a high-profile fight. So you win. It was maybe considered an upset. I don't know what your memory of the fight is. Like, what I read is just after the final bell, Farrell collapses and is rushed to hospital. Does he collapse in front of you or does that happen? Oh, wow.
It does, yeah. We put on a great fight. It was 10 rounds for the English title. And it was, like I say, I think because it wasn't on TV, not as many seen it, but anyone there, it was seen by a lot of people as a small old fight of the year. And it was, we put on a great fight, but it was then overshadowed because of what happened after the fight, where sadly, you know, Kieran collapsed in the ring not long after the final bell, before the decision was given. And he got rushed into hospital.
You must have been absolutely rocked by that. Like, you're fearing the worst.
I mean, me and Kieran are good friends now, but I remember after it, and I think I said in the book, which recently, there's a memory that will never ever leave me, where Kieran was getting carried out the ring on a stretcher, you know, an oxygen mask, and his mum's got hold of the stretcher. She's breaking her heart, you know, holding on to it. Her son's getting carried out, and that for me is the darkest moment of my boxing career. Forgetting he lost it, that for me was a very sort of dark, sort of horrible place sort of to be. I mean, like I said, at this point, I'd not even been announced a winner.
I'd say that announcement was fairly... I'd say that announcement was pretty mooted.
Yeah, no, that's it. They announced us, and what should have been like a celebration of having a good win against a good lad in Kieran. It wasn't even a, you know, whatever. And obviously, they have to announce it. But it wasn't even important. It wasn't slightly important. So, obviously it was much tougher for Kieran, but it was very tough for me as well.
How quickly do you get word that he's going to be okay? Like, do you go back to your dressing room? Do you go home? Yeah, do you go to the hospital?
Back to the dressing rooms and all sorts of, you know, it's like sort of change, just as people, some people saying he's going to be okay, then some people say he's took a turn for the worst, and it's horrible. I remember that night not really sleeping at all. And you're constantly sort of, which isn't the best place for it, I'm constantly looking on social media for updates, and I'm waiting for text messages, what I'm getting all night, and, you know, it wasn't, you know, very nice at all, but it wasn't until sort of the day after when I heard that game was then stable. But obviously, if there'd been a bleed on the brain, that, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say he was in the clear, but it wasn't sort of as critical. He was in hospital for a while, but it wasn't, it wasn't very nice at all.
I can imagine. When does news hit you that his boxing career is over?
I mean, I knew straight, they didn't announce it, but any boxer who has a bleed on the brain is never going to be able to fight again. Or certainly not get a licence with the British Boxing Board. So that, for me, was hard as well, knowing that Kieran was just a lad who trained so hard. He had the same dream as me. And he the passion, the desire that he had, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities in that sense, you know, how hard we trained. And to have that dream taken away from him is very cruel. But this, it half sounds bad, but we've spoke about his sins, and Kieran also said, you know, it was a good thing that I did leave it a bit of time, but I didn't actually see him for a good few months. After it, I think, I didn't know whether it was the awkwardness, and then, you know, I knew, I'd been in touch over the phone and stuff, but I'd not seen him in person. Obviously, I had fights coming up as well, and it hit me very hard, you know, like that. And
as in guilty?
Yeah, I did feel a bit like that, yeah. And obviously, since Kieran said, it could have been the damage was done possibly before the fight, or whoever was in the ring that night would have been that, you know, person. But yeah, you feel a bit of, yeah, a little bit of guilt, really. It's if that's the right thing to say, because I was, but we both know, and all boxers know, once they get in the ring, they take that risk and they put the health put on the line, and that was too dramatic, your life on the line to an extent.
Well, we had, just by coincidence, we had Ray Mancini on the show a couple of months ago, who, you know, was world champion at 21 back in the 80s. The 30-year anniversary, and, you know, he was talking like, he was unlucky enough in that the guy he was in the ring with didn't make it, and, you know, it just completely ruined his career anyway, if not his life.
Yeah. I can only imagine, because that hit me very hard, and Kieran's made a great recovery.
Right.
And whereas with Ray, it was much tougher to, you know, for someone to lose a life like that. And I think, like you said, that's probably, it took such a long time to sort of build up the courage. And I remember one day we had agreed to it, and I remember thinking, I kept wanting to put it off, and literally was, I put the postcode to Kieran's gym. He'd had a gym, Bill, and he started training, lads. Put the postcode in, and before I could change my mind, I phoned him, I told him I was on the way, and bang, I was on my way. And while I was on there, I was thinking, oh, I wish I could get out of this, but I knew I had to do it, if that makes sense. And then, literally, within 10 seconds, everything was cool.
Great.
There was never any, like, bad blood between us, but obviously, and Kieran sort of said to him, no, I'm glad that you probably did leave a bit, because he's probably still a bit raw for him as well, and he's good now. Like I say, we speak regular, support his shows, he's doing brilliant, he's got a great little stable, he's putting on shows, he's one of the hardest working men in British boxing, he's put shows on over in Ireland, he's an ambitious lad, and he gives an awful lot to his lads as well.
You were never regarded as a big puncher.
No.
That said, how do you go from the Farrell fight to trying to hurt an opponent again in the ring?
Well, my my coach, Joe Gallagher, and people around me said that I'd just lost an edge. I'd lost an edge to me of sort of when you need to pull the trigger. And I didn't know it, and I didn't think it at the time, but when I look back now, I probably did, and it took me a while to get it back. Whether it be a few years, I don't know. Mm. I don't know so much, but the people around me said that. And
it's not surprising, really, because
not at all.
Even on a subconscious level, if you have that moment where Kieran Farrell collapses in your memory somewhere and his mother is stretching him out of the ring, I mean, my God, what an image. On some level, more than anything, you're not going to want to see that again at your hands. So that's a very understandable, the brain is a complicated thing. That's going to be in there somewhere.
Like I said, that's a memory that will live in me forever.
Mm.
That the memory of his mother, and you remember things from the fight, but I remember the fight pretty well, but obviously that thing you can forget things like that, but the image of him getting stretched off, well, I never ever will do. So maybe, like you said, that's why it has an effect. And probably when I saw Kieran, that helped ease that a little bit.
Mm.
That helped that ease it a little bit. And it just shows sort of, all sports can be dangerous, but it shows, certainly the sport I'm in, or any contact sports, it shows the risk.
Probably a stupid question because you go on to win a world title, but do you feel like you got your edge back fully and that you pull the trigger now, no problem?
Yeah, without doubt. I understand it a lot more now, and at the time, I mean, don't know, I was 25, 26, but I, do you know what I mean? I think I've done a lot of growing up. I've become a father, a year after that, so, and I think I've done a lot of growing up, and, it's not just physically, it's mentally as well.
Mm. So, I mean, you do fight back really well. So the Kieran Farrell fight's 2012. 2013, there's an upset against Gavin Reese. And then the performance against Stephen Foster Jr. And a lot of people will probably remember the John Murray fight. He's a Manchester lad as well in 2014. Yeah. So you've got yourself your world title fight against a Cuban fighter, and it's scheduled for January 2015. And that is very much your focus until... You see two lads breaking into your neighbour's house, basically, I wouldn't do it, but you go out after them.
Yeah, I was in training for the Richard Abreu fight. The world title was in January, and then I forgot the date. It's around the 17th of December, the day or so either side, if not. And the fight was in January, and. I was training really well and was in a good place. And Joe was meant to go to the running track, and Joe said, "No, I think you're ahead of schedule, so I don't want to overcook you, so I just want you to go home, rest up with the family, and come in tomorrow, and we'll go again hard again tomorrow. You're in a good place." So I'm like, right, that's good, that's fine. So as I went home, pulled up outside my door, next door's alarm's going off, you don't think anything of it.
Mm.
I phone my neighbour and I said, "Oh, your alarm's going off here and no one's in." And you just presume something, you don't really think of that. You just think, when's this alarm going to go off? It's doing everyone's head in.
Yes.
And
I
phone, and then I said, "Oh, check, you're not getting burgled anyway." So put my stuff in. Anyway, I just looked over the back garden, and as I looked over, I was trying to work out the shadow. Was it a shadow or not in the window? And then next thing, a burglar popped his head out. So, yeah, you do what you think is the right thing, and you take chase, and I see then there's two of them. So I catch them both up. And I got the night off running, but I thought there's no way these two are going to get away from me. Anyway, I've cornered them, but I thought it's going to be hard to walk back with two.
Mm.
With two of them, so I just thought, I'm going to have to take one back. He's going to have to, telling his mate, his partner in crime, and they was getting married as well, and I thought, I don't want them to, I was thinking in my head, they might be money, they might be, I don't, at the times it worked out, they got away with nothing, so that was good.
Mm.
But anyway, so I'm walking back. I thought I was going to walk him back, and
so you've got one of them when you're walking back?
No, I was about to.
Okay.
I was about to
grab one of them.
Listen, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
So on the other one started climbing the fence, getting away, and he was let get away. And to my bit of bad luck, there just happens to be a loose concrete slab, And a few seconds later, it comes down on my head from height. And it knocks me down onto one knee. It didn't, proudly, it didn't knock me out. But I thought, oh, my God, what's that? It's just didn't. I knew straight away that there was not a punch. And I thought, oh, my God. And I went down on my ankle. And I went to stand up. And the other one then had jumped over and he got away. I just missed him to try and pull him back. And anyway, he's always so annoyed, and I can't put any weight on my foot. There's blood running into my eyes. I'm stumbling back home. My partner and a neighbour sort of find me on the way home, you know, stumbling home. And anyway, to sort of, without going on, you know, too long into it, get took to hospital because it's bleeding pretty bad in my head. At this point, the ambulance is stuck and taking too long, so my uncle dashes me off to hospital, and it works out. I have a fractured skull and a broken ankle in a few places.
When you, I guess the comeback is more the story, but just, I wasn't quite clear, when, does that loose slab of concrete just fall as the guy's climbing over the wall, or does he throw it at you?
where I was stood, obviously, I didn't see it was on my blind side, but the way I was stood and how far I was away from it, I'm pretty sure it was through at me.
Right.
Unless a gust of wind blowed it over to me, it was through down onto me.
Okay, so he's getting over the fence. He feels the slab is loose and he chucks it at you.
It's probably
down
then on my head.
Okay. Are these guys ever caught?
Never caught, no. Never ever caught. And no idea. And I say it, you know, without sounding soft, I don't hold any grudge towards them now. It's just like it would have stopped doing what they was doing. If people say, you know, does it bother you? And I say, do you know now, if I found out, so what would I do? Would I get pleasure out of giving those lads a good hiding? Or, do you know, I just thought they'd stop doing what they're doing now and they have to live with that. And if he had satisfaction, there's a lot of people who was very angry with him, to say the least, so they have to live with that. But I don't hold anything against them whatsoever. I just hope that they've stopped doing what they're doing. If you're robbing houses, you're in a very desperate place. It's a real low thing to do. So it wouldn't give me too much, you know, pleasure finding out who it is now.
Okay. So fractured skull and busted ankle. So the fight is off. Obviously, the following month, that world title fight is gone. Is your career in jeopardy? Is the doctor looking at you saying, yeah?
Of course, you know, if you've got a fractured skull and you're a professional boxer, it's not the best injury to have for sure.
Yeah.
But and at that point, obviously, I've got a young family. I've got a little boy, and we're not too long moved into our first house, and you've got bills to pay. It's very very worrying times, and I knew that there could be complications with my boxing career, you know, continuing. Never mind the fact that the dream of being a world champion, my world title shot has been took away from me. Very dark time for us, and sort of thinking what if, and just, but I just knew I had to stay positive, because I thought if I'd sit around feeling sorry for myself, that's not going to do no good for anyone.
Yeah. So how quickly do you get the all clear, or is it a matter of debate, or are people saying you should stop?
There was a few brain scans, seeing specialists, and, you know, all sorts of, you know, clearance. Like, say, the British Boxing Board have got great health and safety regulations and medicals you've got to pass. So I had to do that, but more intense than other boxers because of the, you know, the injury, the circumstances. So I remember by the time I got the all clearance, it wasn't until May. So it was, although I'd got back training, it was a long time, seemed forever.
Yeah.
It's the 4 month, seemed like 4 years, you know, to get that weight lifted off my shoulder.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there was no, like, it's not like the, there's fight insurance for you, or you get some big payment money-wise.
No,
like, you're
exactly that.
You're not left in great shape financially. Does any part of you worry about going back, or are you always going to go back?
No, that was always my aim to get back. If I was going to get past the box again, that's all I was doing. There was never any worry thinking, after the injuries, it's probably not the wisest idea.
Mm.
I'll be honest, I've not got a trade behind me. I've not got, you know, qualifications or nothing else. I wasn't a bad kid at school. I don't know why, but I didn't get, you know, I've not come away with a degree or my A-level or somewhere.
Yeah.
The aim was always, but I wouldn't advise it. Listen, it's worked out for me in the end.
Mm.
But the aim was always to earn my money through boxing, which is crazy when I see the sport now and what people think you get paid in this, but it's, it was, that was also new at the time. So I knew I had to sort of continue.
Yeah. You do continue, and you do, I mean, within a pretty quick amount of time, you do work the world title shot against Darlise Perez, and it's over two fights, like July in the Manchester Arena again. You're a big underdog for this fight. Like, I mean, you know, it's been an up and down career, and you've had some losses,
yeah.
And so you're a massive underdog for the Perez fight, that world title fight. A lot of people think you won the fight. It goes to a split decision, bit controversial.
Just a bit,
to say the least. So I presume you thought you won that fight. How did you approach the second fight? I mean, because generally what happens in any sport, really, when the underdog shocks the favourite and but doesn't manage to beat the favourite on the first day, generally the favourite comes back second time around and wins. So
whether it be in some cases, not all cases, but like FA Cup ties.
Everything, yeah. You kind of think the underdog got they missed their chance. So
yes, totally. And that's what a few people were saying, you know, that was his chance, that was his night, and he didn't get the luck. What he needed, it'll be different, you know, next time. But in my head, I went from being the boxer who got it over the head with a concrete slab to then being known as the boxer who was robbed of a world title, and I was just thinking, oh God, I can't list for the next 30 years. So I knew I had to go out and do that, and I knew, like, once the second fight was you know, in the works and it was all signed off, and at the press conference, I knew that's what I just had to bring. That was my chance. I had to take that chance, and well, thankfully I did, and I knew, I remember coming out, walking out that night, and I just remember thinking, there's no way, nothing, no one, all circumstances will stop me winning this world title tonight.
Mm. You put in another brilliant performance. You knock him out in the fifth with a body shot, and, you know, I said it's not like you're a renowned knockout artist, but you knock him out in the fifth with I say, you know, people have called it Ricky Hatton-esque kind of a body shot in the fifth.
Yeah, it did. It was the best body shot I've ever threw, and obviously being a Ricky Hatton fan at the arena from a young boy and seeing some of the body shots he delivers, for me to win my world title like that, it doesn't come much sweeter. And obviously you're weird at the start of the programme, the commentary. You could hit the atmosphere in the arena that night, the roof nearly come clean off, and it was something that was the dream achieved, as in, and like I said, that wasn't from the injury, that was from age of 10 when I first laced. It was like as a teenager when there was times when I wanted to go out with my mates and I had to make sacrifices. Everyone has to make sacrifices, but you know, you miss out on a lot of things. The family time you miss on, it makes everything worth it. And that, I think, you see the emotion in me after it, that was like, and also, it was a weight off my shoulders. Like, I'd been carrying this thing of, you know, that's what I wanted to do, and the hope of becoming a world champion after coming so close last time. I didn't want to be known as a nearly man for the rest of my career, rest of my life. So it was a huge weight lift off the shoulders, and, you know, satisfaction, joy, the lot, all kind of emotions rolled into one.
Yeah, I think after, well, even after hearing your story now, just down the phone, and the Kieran Farrell fight, and coming back from fractured skull, I think it will play the commentary again. It adds a little something when you've heard your story.
He has the home advantage, and he has a wonderful body shot. Anthony Crowell, I'm not sure he's going to make it. I think he's going to be knocked out here. It is over. Anthony Million Dollar Crowell has the dream.
Fairy tales do come true sometimes. and he really deserves it. And look at what it means to him. He's finally, he's world champion in Manchester.
The winner by Kansas and the new WBA lightweight champion of the world, the Fighting Pride of Manchester, Anthony
Yeah, it's even better second time round. So that's a good night out in Manchester. Are you a Man City man or a Manchester United man?
No, I'm a Red.
I've seen Wayne Rooney at a few of your fights.
Yes, I am. Wayne, you know, is great. He's for a number of years, and he's into his boxing.
Yeah.
He always supported me. He's been there for a few of the fights, as some of the other players have. Last time out, Michael Carrick was sat ringside. And, I'm very fortunate. You know, the club gave me great support, and I've had, you know, the honour of going on the pitch a few times and stuff at half-time and going down to the training ground. So they've been great with me. They really have. You know, get lucky enough to get invited to some of the end-of-season awards and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's very... it means an awful lot to me to, you know, the players you cheer on week in, week out at Old Trafford.
So, I guess to bring us up to where we are now, like, your first title defence against Barroso was, some people say one of your best performances, and then Jorge Linares, two fights against him, and ultimately it's you lose to him and come up short, two fights. So, you don't feel like that was last, I guess it was 24th of January 2017, so that was last year. Did you let yourself down in those fights? Was he just better on the nights? And I know you're very keen. Like, this is the, you don't feel like you're done or that your story is done. You are coming back.
Since then I've had the good win in October against
the Ricky Burns fight.
Yeah, the freeweight world champion. So now I'm back near the front of the queue for another world title shot.
Yeah,
you know, maybe a fight away from Matt. But you know, the Linares fights. There's, you know, I can hold my hands up. First fight, I lost the fight. It was competitive. It was close. The one, too much in, but the right man won.
Right.
But, you know, it was a good fight. Wanted a rematch. And then second time round, for the first time in my career, I got well beat. And, you know, I've just got to hold my hands up. I'd done everything in camp after me.
Mm.
I felt brilliant walking in there. I really thought I was going to turn it round. And I got well beat, and I lost to a future Hall of Famer in Jorge Linares, a 3 or 4 weight world champion. The only thing I had to take was the disappointment, because I really did believe I would turn it round. But I got over the disappointment quicker than you think, because I knew I'd just held my hands up, and he got it so right on the night. And you listen, he's a nice guy, and that Jorge is. Speak to him regular, and like I say, I lost to the better man, and that's what happens sometimes. And you've got to be man enough to hold your hands up and admit that. And like I say, that's certainly what happened that night. But I believe sharing 24 rounds with a great fighter like him has improved me as a fighter.
Yeah,
I'm still working hard, still trying to improve.
Yeah,
and
the Ricky Burns fight was going to build as make or break, and so you,
of course,
you,
again,
you,
yeah, I've had a
come
few
through
of them
that.
In my
yeah,
career,
yeah, yeah. There's a bit of a pattern there. You're having them right since 2011, but you come through that fight. So yeah, you feel like a title fight might be one or two fights away, and that is the plan to get back to where you were in 2015. That's the current state of play.
I'm just waiting on news now. Any day now, really, say when my next fight will be.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to being out, even March, April time, and just, you know, hopefully a meaningful fight, and then win that, and then summertime to look towards another world title shot. I'd love that.
Okay, well, listen, let's hopefully speak to you later in the year.
It's been great speaking to you.
Yeah, world champion again would be a nice way to chat
Thank
to you again.
You.
So
yeah,
best of luck.
I'm confident I can do that.
Okay, thanks a million, Anthony. Great to hear from you.
Thank you. You take care.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.